Depois com o que jogou que deixo na casa, depois onde eu tenho. I live in Shopskosagang, Dumnish Nabeg. And we're located like 3 hours from Winnipeg. And the reason why I'm here today was to meet with the people that came from all over Canada to talk about our land issues and our struggles. And I was hoping to form more alliances with them and be more face to face with them and put a face to their emails when we talk to each other on the phone, and then finally we get to see each other and be in the same forum, if not really to hash out what we're dealing with, but mostly just to touch base with them, what they want from, like what we want from each other, how we can support each other. That was my main reason for coming here.
Can you tell us a little bit about the main struggles that your community is facing? It's sort of a very well-known struggle, but if you can just sort of provide the basics of the struggle that your community has been facing and struggling in the last few years.
Well, the main struggle is the encroachment of big corporations into our territory. And it's just been our homeland for as long as we can remember. My grandmother and my grandfather hunting like all over the land and being free to roam and to live their way of life as Anishinaabeg. And part of their identity is land-based, and it's the animals that are part of us too. Like all our identity as a nation comes from the land. So it's not just about like kicking the loggers out or just protecting the water from pollution, but it's about protecting our life as a nation, as Anishinaabeg, because our identity comes from there. And for thousands of years, we've been here since like time started. And that's what we want to pass on to our children. But the way it is right now with the resource extraction and then more new resource extraction coming, which is the mineral extraction, the mining and the water pollution, the logging, like it's all part of that, like trying to protect our way of life and for our children. And people say, well, why don't you move in with the times? Like go, shopping at Safeway and go, take your children to school, get them educated. Three of my children don't go to school. I only allow two of them to go, and the rest I don't. And it's kind of like part of that assimilation process that I'm trying to stop with my children. And I feel like that if I can stop some of my children from being assimilated and to make them more land-based, that we have more of a chance to survive as a people.
The blockade that took place in Grassy Narrows has been described as the longest standing blockade in Canadian history. Could you go back to that and the time when the youth decided to take the step of cutting down some trees and responding to this encroachment on your lands?
It was a really long process because we had been like trying to meet with Abitibi and MNR and tell them you're destroying the forest, you're polluting the water. And it was like we tried many different avenues to protect the land, and we met with Abitibi. We went to information centers, and then we realized our voices were not being heard. And then when we started saying blockade, people were kind of thinking, how are we going to do the blockade? How are we gonna? What do we do? Do we put like big cement things there, or do we like? So it was just like out of frustration that these youth finally said, stop talking. We're going to go in the forest and we're just going to cut some trees down. They didn't tell us. They just went in the forest and cut some trees to try and fell them on the road. And then when my older brother heard about that, and these young people almost like their car broke down in the forest, and they my brother had to go looking for them, and he realized this is really serious. The young people are really serious. So all of a sudden the blockade just started, and it was my brother for a few nights alone out there. And these young people that had done this out of frustration started like realizing, hey, the people's behind us, because all of a sudden all, our whole community came, and they're just stopping logging trucks, and they realized it was very simple to turn the logging trucks away, to just tell them, no, you can't go past here, just using their bodies as a shield and telling them to turn around, turn back, you can't come here anymore. And that's how our people like became empowered. That was that simple, just put their bodies in the way and just stop them and turn them away. And so it went on for about a year, the actual blockading, and it kind of stopped when the logging trucks got out of that area. But last winter, some women went in the forest and they were still kicking logging camps out. They went to this one trailer, and they're like in the north end of our territory, and they went and told them, you are now evicted, you have 30 hours to get out of here. And that man said, I don't have to get out of here. Well, they still gave him the notice. It was like an eviction notice. And they went and checked the next day, and they were gone. So I guess his superiors must have told him, you know, get out, or there'll be blockades probably. But we, since then, we've gone through a lot of like different court experiences and so on, and I think it's a way of pushing our people down to scare them that if you don't listen to us, that you're going to end up in court and we're going to, you know, give you a lot of trouble. So that's where we're at right now. It's kind of like in a court process.
Talk a little bit about the community. When I visited, and from what I've read, people of a certain age, over 30 or 40, are all suffering from a whole set of diseases that are a result of poisoning. And talk a little bit about that, what it's like and how people are responding to that sort of killing of your community by the pollution of logging companies.
Actually, we started a contaminant study in August, and Leanne Simpson and Trish Sellers are working with us. They're two doctors, and that's part of that. And the reason why we started it was because two children were born with cancer in the brain, babies, and one baby died already. She died last year. She was 2 years old, but she got diagnosed with it when she was a little baby, and then she fought it and fought it, and she was in Winnipeg for 2 years, and she finally died. And then there's another boy, and the cancer was taken out of him, out of his brain, successfully. And there's a lot of little children that are getting seizures, and we know, like upstream in Weyerhaeuser, there's still dumping. They're not maybe dumping mercury anymore, but they're still dumping a lot of toxic chemicals. If you go to Environment Canada and you look in the pollution watch, you'll see how many cancer-causing agents are going into the water, and it goes directly downstream to us. And we found out through the last study that there's still high levels of mercury in the animals. And the doctor, Trish Sellers, she does sediment sampling. This is supposed to come out after, but I'll let you know now. We're going to let that out in the summer. The mercury is still on the top layer of the sediment. Naturally, in any river system, the mercury is supposed to get buried. As the river flows, it covers the mercury. Well, the mercury is at the top, and she's still trying to figure that out. How come the mercury hasn't got buried yet? So we're still getting the highly toxic levels of mercury in the fish. And people tell us to eat white fish only. It's safe because it's a herb, only eats herbs. But a walleye it's a carnivore and eats minnows. So that's what our people mostly eat, is walleye. And it's not that we're like crazy or whatever, but it's a traditional way of eating. And that's why we still eat that high level mercury. walleye, and the white fish is not as good, but that's what we're told to eat. So that's what I mean, like, it's like our way of life gets taken away by these pollutants and everything. And it's not just 30 and 40 year olds that are sick, it's the younger children that are sick right now too, that are doing the study.
Yesterday you opened the circle, mm-hmm. with a ceremony and a prayer, drum ceremony, and you shared your struggle that you just shared with us. But you also sat in the room as other people shared their struggles as well. And this gathering brings people who are, you know, confronting the same issues that you are. Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit about how you felt and what you think when you heard other people's struggles and stories? Share with us a little bit about your feelings when you went through that process yesterday.
Well, for the first part, I felt really honored to sit with all these powerful people. But at the same time, because we've been so direct action, I felt like all these stories were coming out of the pain, the struggles and all that. And I felt at the same time that time was going by really fast and we still hadn't come up with a plan of action of how we're gonna support each other. And for me, a plan of action is not verbal or not written paper, but it's like flipping a car over and blocking a road or taking over an office or just like being really heard. And I had this image in my mind that when I came here to meet all these powerful people that we're all gonna have like a really powerful action plan, maybe to go support the tar sands people because it's gonna affect us all. It's in their territory that all these cancers are coming out. And it's the same story all across the board, like all across from one ocean to the other ocean, that our people are dying of all these sicknesses. And we have the first contact of the toxic chemicals. And then we're the ones trying to yell out and say, help us, you know, our people are getting really sick and they're dying. And so I had this expectation that we were gonna come up with a really powerful action plan. And in that way, I have a feeling of disappointment. But at the same time, I feel happy that I was able to meet these people. And hopefully from this meeting today, that they will come up with a powerful action plan and not just paper and not just another conference and not just another meeting. I'm tired of meetings.
You heard about all these struggles. What are the actions that are necessary to achieve justice?
I think the first thing is, as individual communities, here's Grassy, here's Barrier Lake, when we're so like separated, alone, I think what needs to happen is that we all come together, and I think that's part of the government's really scared of us to come together. Not just as the Anishinaabeg, but also like solidarity groups that support us, because there's a lot of powerful minds in all those groups. And I heard some really awesome things that an elder was saying. And I was thinking, with all these minds together, that's one thing the government doesn't really want, is to have that kind of forum. And I think more of these forums have to happen, so that we can come up with a really powerful plan. Like, not meetings, but just like maybe in the spring, another like a direct action plan to get people together and just like all go together and just do something together. But I don't know what it is. I'll dream about it, I'll think about it.